Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Pinckney to Pinckney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. I want everybody to know I had a tremendous time in Louisiana. Yes, I did. I had a tremendous time in the state of Louisiana. We're fighting. We're fighting for justice for all. We're fighting justice for Mr. Victor. Mr. Victor is a man who was accused of murdering his son, and it never happened. It's unfortunate that he's in prison today. And he's going to be in prison until we stand up and do something right. The Unanimous Is Not Enough campaign is led by Belinda Brown. The campaign is a collaborated effort of civil rights organizations, faith-based organizations, individuals, and other stakeholders dedicated to correcting the unintended injustice of Louisiana recently enacted unanimous jury verdict law. The purpose, to get redress for the estimated 2,000-plus incarcerated Louisiana citizens whose convictions were not grandfathered into the state of Louisiana 2018 change to its constitution requiring an unanimous jury verdict to attain a felony conviction. The issue, which Louisiana 2018 constitutional amendment required a unanimous verdict to attain a felony conviction, goes a long way in addressing the future racial and social inequality of the state criminal justice system. The amendment does nothing to give relief to 2,000-plus poor and minority individuals who was convicted and are still incarcerated under the split jury rule. It is our belief that the language of the law makes this oversight intentional as to not to overburden Louisiana criminal court system with a large number of retrials, grandfathering those cases which mandate. It is our belief that the language of the state make that this oversight intentional as not to overburden the finances of the Louisiana criminal court system by incurring the cost associated with a renewal of all 2,000-plus cases. It is our belief that our language of the state makes this oversight intentional as to not to infringe on the revenue generated each year by the labor of those 2,000-plus citizens unjustly convicted under the split verdict rule. The goal of the Unanimous Verdict Is Not Enough campaign is to secure the release or retrial of every Louisiana citizen convicted and still incarcerated under the split jury rule. Background: from 1880 until 1973 in the state of Louisiana, to be convicted of a felony crime, it only required a jury of 9-3 instead of the traditional unanimous 12 votes. According to Thomas Aiello, associate professor of history and African studies at Vazazo State University in Georgia, and the author of The Jim Crow Last Stand, non-unanimous trial jury verdict in Louisiana. After the Civil War and the Reconstruction period that followed, as the Southern state worked to rebuild a government to include newly freed state slaves, white Southern Democrats known as the Redeemers were working to do the opposite. After Reconstruction, the Redeemers reimposed white control over the system by creating practices such as a system known as convict leasing. Who ever heard of convict leasing? Have you? Have you heard of convict leasing? Amazing. 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 The Redeemers realized that the exceptional clause to the 13th Amendment of the United States Constitution explicitly enslaved incarcerated individuals. All the Redeemer would have to do is to figure out a way to tap into the state prison population, and they would once again have a huge pool of free labor, literally creating a distinguish between a difference, without a difference. The convict lease system allowed the state to rent out its prisoners to people or companies who needed labor. The goal, of course, was to create enough free labor so that the railroad, the plantation owners, and other groups will once again have access to free labor. But the only way to make the practice work was to make sure that they have enough convicts out of the system came Louisiana non-unanimous jury rule. One of the ways to make sure that the state would get more convictions is to lower the jury requirements. So in 1880, the state legislators said juries no longer need to reach a unanimous decision for a felony conviction. The new burden would be 9-3 in favor of conviction. In 1894, Louisiana lawmaker passed a new law, a new jury selection law for the Orleans Parish that allowed local commissioners leeway in selecting jurors, resulting in fewer black jurors. In 1898, Louisiana Convention delegates crafted a new state constitution, effectively ridding blacks from the jury, from the voters' roll. They also rectified the 9-3 vote in serious felony trial, 1966. Federal appeal court tosses Orleans Parish jury selection method, in which clerks avoided picking manual laborers, daily wage earners, finding systematically kept the blacks off jury veneers. The state jury may convict a defendant by less than a unanimous, even though the federal law required that the federal jury must reach a criminal verdict unanimously. The four justice plurality opinions of the court written by Justice White affirmed the judgment of the Oregon Court of Appeal and held that there was no constitutional right to an unanimous verdict. Oregon law did not violate the due process. We're talking about bringing people home. There are 2,000 people that's locked up today that we want to bring home. And this is something that we can do. We also have a special interest in this case, Mr. Victor, a man who was convicted by a 10-2 jury, is if we don't do something, may have to spend the rest of his life in prison along with his wife. His wife is serving 40 years, claiming that she also was part of the murder scheme. Untrue today. We have to take a stand. And I want all my listeners, I want people to email me, talk to me about this. Give me your opinion, one way or the other. We got to get people talking. We got to make this happen. This is truly, truly, truly important, not only to the people in Louisiana, but around the country. This is a great opportunity for the people to take a stand that never stood up for anything before in their life. And, you know, I love my black brothers and sisters, but a lot of time when it comes to my black brothers and sisters, if it don't concern them, they do not care. That's why when their time comes, they have nobody to stand with them. Very unfortunate. But we're going to take a stand. We're going to take a stand all over the country. I have talked to a group on Friday morning who are willing to stand with Belinda Brown and her group. And also we had a few people from on the other side, Colorado. They want to come, and they want to stand with Belinda Brown. And my group out in California, they want to come also. But here's what's important. We need your help. We need your help to make this thing happen. It cannot happen without you. There's no way. We need you. We need your help to help us get this out. And my good friend in New York, Ralph Pointer and Betty Davis, strong fighters, strong, you know, I mean warriors, people who... Wow, been standing for years and years and years, and they're willing to take out the time and come and join my good friend Belinda Brown in Louisiana, because we are going to make this happen. We're going to put all our energy into this to make sure it happens. There are things we're going to need to do, and we're going to need help. Those of you who are out there, I'm going to bring on Belinda Brown so she can talk about how you can help financially, because it's crucial that you have resources in order to fight. You can't fight if you don't have the resources. So we're going to build a kitty up for her. I pledged that I was going to send her $100, and I'm going to do exactly that. I'm in the process now of making it happen. And those of you around there, I want you to know, send her the money. She'll tell you how. And if you need more information about that, email me, because she definitely need the help. So at this time, I'm going to bring in one of the best persons I know from Louisiana, down there by Whitney Plantation, a young man who I met, who took me and my wife, Ralph Pointer, and Betty Davis around to really get a feel for the community. And I really appreciate him taking the time out and doing that. Mr. Taylor, are you there?
Yes, I am, Reverend.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. We just continue to fight. You know, the battle continues, you know. Like I'm explaining to people, this is no conflict. This is the real deal. We're at war, and we're going to bring the people home. But what I want you to talk about today, I want you to talk about Mr. Victor. We understand the 10-2 is crucial. But Mr. Victor, he's the guy who's going to lead this charge and actually make it happen. So tell us a little bit about Mr. Victor. Talk a little bit about him. Talk a little about his family. And we're going to see where we're going to go from there. Because I know these listeners are fired up. They want to, you know, when I mentioned the word that he was, he may have killed his son or something, but which I know he did not kill him. And people are going to be calling in about it. This is what people call in about. So let's talk about Mr. Victor and how you know him.
All right. Thank you, Reverend Pitney, for the opportunity to talk about this man. This is a very unique situation. The idea that this gentleman killed a child is ludicrous. If you get to know this man and who he is and look at his reputation in the community and with families, for these people to accuse this man in spite of all the evidence that points otherwise, anything exculpatory, they downplayed it, and they just brought up all sorts of negative stuff, innuendos and outright lies and misrepresentations. Mr. Victor was born and raised in this community up here in the River Parishes. The unique thing about him was that we had a young black man at 42 years old at the time that this occurred, who had no involvement with the police, with criminality of it. Matter of fact, he was an outstanding businessman. At 19, he was an ordained minister. He and his wife had 6 boys. They homeschooled their boys. He started a charter school. And unfortunately, he lost his wife. And he had his 6 boys whom he was raising until he met this other lady that he later married, who had 5 boys, a single mother. And so he took all of those in, and they had one big family of 13 boys, because he and his new wife had 2 new boys who were babies when this stuff took off. They accused Mr. Victor of killing his 9-year-old stepson, whom he voluntarily brought into his house and took him as his son. And the same rules applied to those boys as applied to his older sons whom he had raised. He had teenage boys, and he had all raised them with a no corporal punishment policy. he did not believe in. His method of raising and disciplining his boys, and they were all boys, and he did that without the spanking thing. For some reason, he spared the rod. It was his policy. His wife had a hard time adhering to that. Of course, as a single lady trying to raise five boys, she used to beat them. And she admitted that she had to physically, she had to spank those boys to try to get their attention. That conflicted with Mr. Victor's policy once they got married. But like she told all authorities and anybody who would listen, Mr. Victor didn't even spank his own children, and he didn't allow me to spank my children. But I continue to spank him, but I can only do it when he's going to work. So, no, he never spanked anybody, and he certainly did not brutally beat any 9-year-old child to death. This was an average, decent black man, above average in that he was very independent. He raised his whole family, and they were not on welfare. They were not taking any help. They didn't require it. He ably provided for his family and for helping other people in the communities. And this is what really upset me so much when they came at Mr. Victor. And the reason they came at him had nothing to do with that little black boy, because we know here in America that this system does not care about little black boys.
Absolutely.
They brutalize them. We have the school to prison system. We actually have the womb to prison system when it comes to young black boys. They are born into this trap. So the fact that these people made all this mess over a 9-year-old black boy, we need to consider that and think about that. Now, this was about they needed a way to stop Mr. Victor in what he was doing. That is the most obvious and only reason you can find, because this man was convicted of second-degree murder in spite of the fact that the official autopsy report stated unequivocally that the child did not die of trauma. There was no homicide. The first court trial they had with Mr. Victor was thrown out because the judge said to them, why did you bring this man in my court without any charges? There is no homicide here. This autopsy report clearly states there is no homicide. And she threw it out of her court. But they insisted, I don't know how they did, to get that judge to hear it. Some kind of way they manipulated the autopsy report. I don't know who changed it. I don't know if the local coroner actually committed that. I think that's a crime. He is not a forensic pathologist. There was no new evidence. They brought all this up and brought this man to trial. This judge, after throwing it out and dismissing it, she finally told him, don't come back to her court with this man. They went in the same jurisdiction and got another court sitting in the same 40th Judicial District of the state of Louisiana. And this woman rearrested Mr. Victor and refused him bail, even though they never returned almost over $4 million he had put up in bail. He wasn't guilty of anything. They should have returned. I mean, the things they did to this man, we could write a book about it. After going to the state of Louisiana and recusing all of these people in our county, which we call parishes, he had all of them recused on grounds, prejudicial grounds, whatever the basic rules were that he used. But they disregarded that. They got the state to come in and try him. They persecuted this man. He was tried in the news. This national news television thing called America's Most Wanted had pictures of this man, had somebody portraying him actually beating the little child. They ran this in a national news, on a national television, under this national program called America's Most Wanted. I could not understand how they could do that. They had a reenactment on TV that was so real it shocked me. When I was shown the picture, at first I thought, how could Mr. Victor be doing this on TV? But they found someone who looked just like him and had him do a fake reenactment of him actually beating the child. And how could that happen in America? This man had not been convicted. When you put that on all over the United States, where is that trial not prejudiced? It has been prejudiced all over this country by these people. But they have the power to do that to us. And it's ludicrous today. This was in 2008 that this child died. It was in 2014 that they convicted Mr. Victor and his wife on these fake trumped-up charges. There is not legally in this state a court. I have not seen any evidence where professional autopsies were done to prove that there was a murder. The only autopsy I saw was the one that came out of Orleans Parish office, which they are the nearest people around here that do have the legal staff to perform autopsies. There are no licensed forensic pathologists in these parishes like St. John. I know we can't afford one. All of us go to New Orleans to get the autopsies done when we need professional people. And the court has to have, how do you know that somebody was killed? You get an autopsy. The autopsy said the child did not die of trauma. I don't understand why we're still fighting this battle, sir. I don't understand why somebody don't stop this first and foremost and say, where is the crime? Because we have a professional forensic pathologist who came down here to testify on Mr. Victor's behalf, and this court refused to let her testify. Because if she was to testify, she's going to prove, as she did in the very first trial, she was there. And she, in case those people did not understand or know how to read an autopsy report, in his very first trial, Mr. Victor had this forensic pathologist who worked for the United States government, who was instrumental in training some of the people in New Orleans, just coincidentally. But she's a top expert in the country. She testified at that first trial. And the judge saw it clearly. And anybody, I could see it. It's not complicated to read an autopsy report because they state plainly the cause of death.
Yeah.
And if it's a homicide, they're going to state that. They said it was not a homicide. But this man is sitting in prison, sentenced to life without parole.
Wow.
Life without parole.
Wow, amazing.
Policemen shoot unarmed black children down and don't even get indicted. Those that go, we have a horrible murder by an armed trained policeman of an unarmed black man. He did not get life without parole. It's mind-boggling to me that today this sort of stuff goes on in this country.
Well, you know, one thing, Mr. Taylor, we got to stand up and fight and show them that we still got fight in us in order to stop this madness. That's exactly what it is. It's madness, you know, and it's continued because most of the time we never fight until something happens to us. And when you wait until something happens to you, it's too late, you see. And,
exactly, and that's
our game plan. That's one of the things that we have to change, Mr. Taylor. That's why when Belinda Brown called me and asked me to come down there, I didn't hesitate because I know for a fact that there's a major problem in this country, and we should be commending Belinda Brown for taking up this fight. And also you, Mr. Taylor, you had the courage to stand up. I know when we was at that courthouse and making our chance and doing what needs to be done, you know, you inspired me. You know, after you got through talking, we couldn't do nothing but say free Mr. Victor, sir, you know, and just talk about this stuff. You know, unanimous is not enough. Unanimous is not enough. These are things that we have to instill into our community so people can understand how important it is. Don't wait until something happens to you and want to fight. It's too late. You need to start fighting now.
We should have started years ago. I didn't even touch on the other horrible injustice, and that's that non-unanimous jury system that was designed especially to do what they did to Mr. Victor. That came out of their own mouth. We need to read in 1898 or whenever it was, these guys in the state legislature talking about what they needed to do to incarcerate these Negroes. And when they ratified this in 1974, the same language was then rig the juries so that they can unjustly incarcerate black people.
Yeah,
now,
there
they
you
stated
go.
That mm-hmm. was the purpose.
Yeah.
And they certainly used rigged juries. They rigged everything in this trial with Mr. Victor. I don't know what they did not rig. But they were so unfair and outrageous. We need to revisit all of that. That whole thing was outrageous.
Absolutely. Mr. Taylor, I know we talked about Mr. Victor and some of the things that had happened to him, which is so amazing. But listen, I'm down to about 2 minutes for you. I want you to tell my listening audience exactly what you want them to know and what they can do to help Mr. Victor.
Well, I certainly wish I had the legal expertise to say that in 2 minutes. What we need to do, though, we need to reach out to each other. The first thing we've got to do as a community in America that's been raised up and conditioned to hate each other, we have to reach out and embrace each other. Had this black community come together, this would not have happened to Mr. Victor. This happened because of the disunity that we suffer in among. I'm saying community. We do not have a black community. We are not in commune with each other. We have to reach out to each other and come together. There's a lot of work to be done, but it doesn't take much to really look around at your brother and realize who your brother is. I think it was Mr. King who said, if we don't come together as brothers, we're going to die together as fools here in America, fighting each other over silly things like denominations of religions and political parties and whatever foolishness that we allow to divide the black people and have us here in the 21st century. After 400 years of slavery, we are here still in the 21st century and not able to reach out and love each other and act and live in unity with each other. Please, brothers, let's reach out to each other, brothers and sisters, mothers and daughters. But please, let's stop the madness. This would never have been able to happen to Mr. Victor or to the many thousands, tens of thousands of victims of this oppressive, racist system that we live under in America today.
Wow. Let me say this to you, Mr. Taylor. I truly, truly appreciate you. And my goal is to at least mention Mr. Victor every single week until we can bring him home. I want him to come home. I want his wife to come home. I want him to be back, reunited with his family. And my pledge is to not only to bring Mr. Victor home, bring his wife home, but also those 2,000 people that's locked up in the prison in Louisiana. That's
yes,
my goal,
sir.
Mr. Taylor.
I certainly appreciate you, sir, and the work that you're doing and you reaching out to our community to help us. We thank you.
Mr. Taylor, and I'm going to be talking to you during the week, too. I'm going to give you a call so you might be able to think of something else we need to do or should be doing. So I'm also going to be trying to contact Belinda Parker Brown and get everybody on the same page because we're going to fight until we win this. And I just want to thank you so much for your courage, and I really, really have nothing but love and respect for you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you. Thank you, Mr. Taylor. Thank you so much just for standing up, because we don't have many of us, so we got to stand together. Thank you, Mr. Taylor.
Thank you, sir.
On that note, I got to bring in my good friend from New York, one of the truly soldiers, warriors, who was down in Louisiana with me just this past week. And I got nothing but love and respect for him. When I called him and told him that I had to go to Louisiana to free some people, he did not hesitate. Him and Betty Davis said, "What time do you want me to be there?" And that's nothing but love and respect and understanding and a true hero. He's not a normal guy. He done fought this battle for many, many years, and he's my hero. My hero, and I'll say it again, Ralph Pointer, are you there? Talk to me, Ralph.
Yes, I am, Reverend Pinckney, and I'm listening intently, and I can only say that this is a case that must be won. This is an example of what oppression and terrorism really means. As you always say, today it's me, tomorrow it's you. This is an example of the system of oppression that is almost standard practice used against black men who have been successful. I believe it was Ida B. Wells who did the study of lynchings and who fought against lynchings and tried to get a federal law against lynchings. And one of the things that came out of her study was it wasn't vagrants who were lynched and murdered in the South. It was successful businessmen, black businessmen, who were consistently lynched. And they lynched him because of business. And Mr. Victor is a perfect example. And I love the way Mr. Taylor, and I remind people standing in that courtyard, that down home courthouse, was something that you read in books. And the stories that we all read about of lynchings in the South, this was a reenactment, but it was real. And I commend Mr. Taylor for being there and showing courage, because when you're in that situation, you know what they want to do with you, those who stand up. And Mr. Taylor is a stand-up, and I look forward to being there again with him. But this time, I will bring with me the presence of a lawyer who's not afraid and has experience, and that's our son. That's Lynn Stewart and myself's son, Jeff Stewart, who's been a lawyer for 20 years here in New York with a successful career, who understands law and who is not afraid, and will be there in spirit and sometimes in person with us to fight this case. So therefore, I am very, very excited and very pleased to have the feeling that Mrs. Belinda Parker Brown has instilled in us to say that we must fight this fight. And she has done quite a job of bringing people together to fight this fight properly. And we're going to fight this fight, and we're going to win it. And I say to you, Reverend Pinckney, thank you. You've helped so much to free our dear sister, Lynn Stewart, when she was in the gulag. And you're working again to free Mr. Victor. And I have faith in your good works, and you're reaching out to people, your success in reaching out to people to bring us together to fight this fight that must be fought and to win this battle. And to Sister Belinda Brown, Belinda Tucker Parker Brown, and Sister Taylor, who were deep in the belly of the beast, but show courage. And we're going to follow that leadership and to get courage ourselves and to make victory possible and see Mr. Victor continue his development and success with business. And I say continue because he bought a track and has already developed 27 homes, I believe, 27 or 25, and has a contract to bring business into the black community and has the support, the of some NBA or NFL football players and people who have invested in him to finish this project. And this is his crime, being successful and uniting people and giving people the opportunity to organize as a people to develop a community. And it's and I look forward to our winning this struggle for not only for Mr. Victor, but for all of us, all of the people involved in this. And so thanks again, Reverend Pinckney, for your great work. And we will be seeing much of each other in the near future. And I guess until we win this struggle, we'll be working together.
Amen. Ralph, I just want to thank you. You're just a tremendous person, you and Betty both. And, I tell you, you guys are my hero. I tell you, because there's never been a fight that you didn't like. And I tell you, when you come, you come. You're not joking. You're not jabbing. You're laying it down. Thank you so much, Ralph. Tell Betty much love, and we will talk to you very, very soon. Thank you so much for your work.
Thank you.
That was my good friend. That was my very good friend, Ralph Pointer. I'm going to bring in my good friend from Chicago, Joe Perry, activist who acts and a hero to the community. Joseph Perry, are you there? Talk to me.
Yes, I'm here, Reverend. Yes. Thank you for having me on your show today.
Oh, it's an honor. It's an honor to have you, young man. It's an honor. And I tell you, you know, the work that you have done, the research itself is so tremendous in reference to this case. And once again, we gotta thank Belinda Parker Brown for the work she's done. She have brought a group of people together that probably never would have thought about coming together, especially on an issue like this. But we're here and we're fighting. We're not gonna stop until we bring them home. I'm talking about over 2,000 people, and I think we can do it, Joe. Talk to me about some of the history of it, which I know it started back from 1880 until 1973, but I know it was 93 then. But you tell us from your point of view. Talk to me about that.
Well, you know, you did a fantastic job of really covering everything earlier, and whatever you missed, Mr. Taylor, he filled in. But I can say this, that what I tried to do was to go and actually look at the actual law and read it, and then ask myself, what do they got in mind here? I mean, it ain't that they just want to be mean to us, right? I mean, they've got something in mind in doing this. And when you read the actual law in the version of 1898, when they made it part of their state constitution, they were very, 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 very strong on saying if the thing that you're the crime that you're convicted of, or the crime that you've been arrested for, you're charged with, involves hard labor. Why mention hard labor? What's that got to be in there for? But if it mentions, if the crime you've committed, the punishment is hard labor, then you're going to get a 9-3 jury. You're going to get 9 jurors in order to convict out of the 12, and that's enough to send you to the penitentiary. And then it hit me. When they're talking about hard labor because they intend to enslave people. That's their intention. That's exactly what they were trying to do. And so you see that slavery really never ended. It just changed form, and it got quiet, and it gave them a chance to go tell the rest of the American people, oh, we're a great country now. We've gotten rid of slavery. Oh, no, you have not, right? Mm. And I think one by one these things got knocked down, and I don't know how the civil rights movement just did not address this one. I mean, because what the civil rights movement was in order to do, of course, they were assassinating people, but what the civil rights movement was to do was to take all this legal oppression based on race and get rid of it, right? No. And I have to ask the question, if that law is still around, 10-2 was still around until just last year, what else is around that's meant to, right, to enslave us? You know, there's got to be a whole lot more. And this means that us, the American people, just think if the regular American people would begin to start putting emphasis on this and start investigating this sort of thing. So what happened was I'm going to mention this in case I forget, but after the 1898, Constitutional Convention made it part of the law of the land in Louisiana that you get a 9-3 jury anytime you're going to get convicted and sent to jail for hard labor. Well, then in 1972, they had the Supreme Court stepped in, but it was a different state. It was Oregon. And they made a ruling on it. And the ruling they made on it was, well, 9-3 is a little harsh. You know, that's not constitutional. So now we're going to make it constitutional for the F-10-2, right? So yeah. To me, what the Supreme Court is doing is they're nodding and they're winking to the American public and to these racists that run these corporations and that are in government, like Donald Trump that we got today. It's a nod and a wink to them that, you know, don't worry, we got your back. You know, we're not going to do away with this altogether. You can still do your thing. You know, you can still go take cases like Mr. Victor and do your thing on that and use this 10-2 law. It's just a 9-3 was a little harsh. We think it's better at 10-2. And I would pose this. I live in Chicago, and we just had a big case where a cop, Van Dyke was his name, murdered a 17-year-old black boy in cold blood with an assault rifle. And shot him. He's still on the ground. He's lighting him up, man, 60. And then he was trying to reload, and the other cop stopped him. He only got 6 years in jail. How's that work? The whole country saw it. Everybody saw what happened to Laquan McDonald at the hands of this cop. And yet and still, he only got 6 years. He'll be out in 4. Mm. How does that work?
Wow.
How does that work? Compare this now with Mr. Victor.
He killed the black man. That's the most ridiculous thing ever. He killed the black man. He shot him in cold blood, and he only got 6 years. Joe, I gotta say this, Joe. I mean, if we don't change the way that we're doing business, we are going to be eliminated. And we got all these sellouts and all these other people. How could you be a sellout at this stage in your life, knowing that you're destroying your own people?
Wow.
Absolutely.
Joe. Wow, Joe. I tell you, amazing grace, man. And I just want to say to you, I really appreciate you, my brother. You're a true soldier. You're a true fighter. And when we fight together. And that's, you know, and that's a commitment I'm making to you. And your fight is my fight. And whatever going on, you can always count on me. I'll be there for you, Joe. And we'll take it to next level. I want to bring in Belinda Brown right now, and Belinda Parker Brown, the leader of this Ununanimous Is Not Enough campaign. I want to bring her in because I know that she has a lot to say. I know Ralph has set the stage. We know that the chairman, O'Malley, is also among us. We got so much going on here, Joe, and I just want to tell you thank you, thank you, thank you. When I called you, you didn't even hesitate. You said that you will come down there, and I said, amazing grace. Thank you so much, Joe. But, Joe, I got to bring in Belinda, but hold your thoughts. I'm going to keep you on, so just like that. But we got to bring in Belinda Parker Brown. Belinda Parker Brown, who is spearheading the Louisiana United International, the Ununanimous Is Not Enough campaign. Belinda Parker Brown, are you there? Talk to me.
Yes, 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 Pastor Pinckney, and I am really enjoying the show. I'm still overwhelmed and excited for all you, everybody that came down here from all over the country, Pastor Pinckney. I'm telling you, it was a time, and I know that, you know, I promise you I would take good care of you if you came, and you came and you brung all mm-hmm. your friends and everyone with you. I do know that, I don't know for sure, I forgot to ask you if you had a chance to get some of the gumbo, the Louisiana gumbo at the Half Shell down on the bayou. Did you get a chance to get you some gumbo? I know.
Joe went and got him some. And he didn't want to share his gumbo, which was wrong. But you know what?
So I'm kind of glad you didn't get no gumbo, because now you got to come back, Pastor Pinckney. You know, I didn't have a chance to make you one because we were so intense with the movement and organizing, you know, being on the radio back-to-back. And also we had a chance to do the Fox 8 Access Community Channel, which was very powerful. You know, we're still getting a lot of response from being on that show, you know, just getting the word out to let people know about what's going on with this campaign, Ununanimous Is Not Enough. And, you know, I really feel strongly, I think Raph said it best, that this is one that we can win, Pastor Pinckney, for sure. You know, I have always been very careful to pick my battles. And, you know, after, you know, being a witness in a 10-day trial with Mr. Victor, you know, this has kind of sparked the whole movement of saying that, what are we going to do? You know, we cannot be aware of these horrendous, outrageous, situations where we know what's going on. We know what this means. Joe did the research. You know, we have studied mm-hmm. it. We see it. We see it every day happening in the courtrooms where, you know, it was a schemed up law. You know, it was schemed up to protect the white supremacists. And, you know, right now, Pastor Pinckney, I think that people are waking up. Okay, they are waking up, and I'm so excited about that. I mean, it just really makes me leaps and bounds, you know, in my spirit, because, you know, this has been going on for, you know, all these movements. You know, we had the civil rights movement, you know, 100 years ago with Dr. King, Malcolm X. We can name them all. We can go down the list. But for 400 years, this has been in our Constitution, where slavery is alive and well in America.
Yeah, absolutely.
And like Joe said, it never went away.
No. Mm-mm.
They tricked us. They bamboozled. We've been bamboozled, Pastor Pinckney, but I'm here to declare on, you know, today, that I know for a fact that people have woke up and they're joining up and they're standing with us across this country and saying that Ununanimous Is Not Enough, and we want to do everything within our power to support this movement and change the world. Now, to some people, that may sound, wow, what is she talking about? That's the same thing that, you know, if you was back in Dr. King's day and he was saying, you know, freedom and liberty, you know, and how he had a dream that one day we all would be free, you know, free at last. But Pastor Pinckney, some people felt the same way. And that's the reason why I know, Pastor Pinckney, with having you on board coming down here to Louisiana, it just meant so much to me. And my friend, you know, Betty Davis, I will never forget her. You know, a powerful woman. You know, it's something about a woman in a movement that makes all the difference. Because these are our sons, these are our grandsons, these are our husbands, you know, grandfathers, you know, these are men that is the forefathers, you know, that we have to have as leaders. They have schemed up to eradicate them. And we, as a woman, we cannot just stand by and allow that to happen. That's why we have to free these people, Pastor Pinckney. These men have to be freed. And Mr. Victor, I'm telling you, I know if they can do it to Mr. Victor, they can do it to any of us.
That's true.
So I'm saying that we need all the help we can get. We won't, Pastor Pinckney, you didn't get your gumbo this time, but I promise you, you'll get it next time.
All right. And also, don't forget for Dorothy, because Dorothy, she's probably more of a gumbo eater than myself. So she always, you know, that's the type of food that, you know, that you know, knowing my wife, you know, she's very particular how she eats, but I think her and gumbo can get along. I know that. And
well, we got all kinds of gumbo. We got red bean and rice gumbo. You know, so
yes.
You know, I know she got her red beans and rice when she was down here.
She sure did. And I like red beans and rice myself, and I thought it was so good, Belinda. And but what I want to say now is that we have the best opportunity there is in the world to win this battle, and I think people are beginning to listen and understand.
Yes.
Ralph has got his son on board as a lawyer, which we're going to need, because I know that these lawyers down here are probably scared to death, and I know how they operate. They're too intimidated to stand up with men, because they figure like, I'm not going to let this system eat me up, but the system has already eaten you up if you're willing to let an innocent man go to prison for the rest of his life along with his wife. And
right.
And it's painful and it's disgraceful, but we must be able to move forward and do the things that need to be done. But Belinda, I'm telling you this, we are on the right track. I am telling you this.
Yes, Pastor Pinckney. You know what? I want to say this, Pastor Pinckney. We're not only on the right track, but you said it, that this is bigger than life. And you witness it for yourself. You know, we protest outside of that courtroom on March the 18th on behalf of Mr. Victor. And, you know, we took note and recorded everything that transpired in that courtroom on how we were treated, you know, unfairly in that courtroom. I mean, it was a nightmare inside of that courtroom. You know, when we first arrived, they first of all, they approached us and asked us, are we supporters of Mr. Victor's? And if we are supporters of Mr. Victor, then we have to sit on the back bench.
Right.
Can you imagine in the 21st century being treated that way? Okay. Then we go outside.
Always remember, they get away with what we let them get away with.
Right.
See, always remember that. See, if we let them get away with it, they will get away with it. When we stop allowing them to get away with things, they won't be able to take it to the next level. But anyway, go ahead and talk about
Pastor Pinckney, they were terrified, I'm telling you. And it's all already, since you guys have came down here and graced us with your presence, and you know for yourself it was a powerful move. You know, we was on one of the hottest radio stations here in New Orleans, WBOK 1230 AM, and they allowed us to broadcast for 2 hours back to back on their show, and that was so powerful. And you know, all the mainstream media listened to that show. Now, I'm talking about, when I say mainstream, you know, the sheriff, the DA, you know, all the public officials, the governor, all of them listened to that show, okay? And before you guys can probably even touch down back in Michigan, you know, the news, Fox 8 News, was already talking about, you know, the decision that the Supreme Court have decided that they're going to have the hearing to rule on, you know, on what should happen with this 10-2 verdict, okay? And whether or not, you know, these people should have been retroactive or grandfathered in. So, you know, the cases and stuff, now people are filing more cases, you know. The DA came on TV and they were saying that, we can't afford to have, to retry all of these cases. You know, where are we going to get the money from to do, you know, that is not our problem, okay? Pastor Pinckney, I'm telling you, things are moving down here, and I know time is, you know, running out, but it's so much to say around this. And like I say, you know, it feels good to be in a movement like this, because I truly believe that we are going to make history, that this is one that we will win. And, you know, I just want all the people to unite on it, Pastor Pinckney, because the whole world, you know, needs to be a part and know that this is the right thing to do. It is the right thing to do. Nobody wants to live in a country where there is slavery. And this is what we're saying, that we're not going to tolerate it anymore, Pastor Pinckney. We're not going to stand for it. And I really want to thank you so much for giving me the opportunity. I want to let the people know that I want them to go to my website. You know, I want them to join up with us. I want them to send a donation. I want them to support this movement to help Mr. Victor. You know, I'm excited because I just got off the phone with Ralph Pointer. You know, he's going to be coming on our local show tonight and listen to some of the attorneys that are going to be standing with us. You know, he have given me some good news that his son, you know, that is a very powerful attorney in New York, is going to, you know, want to, you know, review all of Mr. Victor's, you know, materials and documents. And I'm excited about that, because I knew all along that the only way we're going to be able to win this is that we had to go outside of the state of Louisiana and get the people to come in and help us, Pastor Pinckney. And thanks to you that that is happening right now as we speak.
All right. Also, remind Mr. Victor, April the 1st, they will not give him an extension, so he got to have it in April the 1st at the closing of the court day, because we want to make sure that he have all the information that he want on there and include it.
Okay.
It's important that we do that. Next time,
I'm going to get you on the phone with his attorney probably on Monday morning or Tuesday, and I'm going to be talking to
I'll be at the courthouse. Make it Tuesday.
Tuesday. Right. Okay.
Next time I come down, I'm going to bring my own personal doctor down there, Dr. Tans, so he can agree with you with us. People have to understand how important it is to stand for other people, because I think that's one of our weakness that we have with each other. You know, if it don't concern me directly, I really don't care. That's the wrong mentality to have. We have to make sure that we're fighting for everybody. I mean, I don't care who you are. I don't even care whether you like me or not. That ain't even important to me. The important is the issues. See, we fight about the issues, which is more important than the person. And that's what we're dealing with, and that's why we're going to bring Mr. Victor home, and we're going to bring his wife home. We don't ever include, you know, when we talk about Mr. Victor, we don't talk about his wife, but we got to talk about his wife also. And I think that's crucial, and I think we can do it. Listen, we got less than 1 minute, Belinda, say what you want to say, and we are out of here. And next week, same time, I'm going to have Dr. Tan to come on next week so he, because he's got a whip of what we're talking about today. He's going to
want
to talk about that next week. Let's talk about it.
Well, hello to Dr. Tynes, and I would love for him to come down here, Pastor Pinckney. But I believe that we're in a moment right now, and it's a moment of liberation of the minds of our people, and that it is a wake-up call, and I believe that people are waking up because, you know, we know, we've been knowing for quite some time that prison is big money, and, you know, that Louisiana was known as mass incarceration, you know, more people locked up than anywhere else in the world, and now we're saying that we know why, and that's why unanimous is not enough, and we need everybody to come and stand with us and support us, and they can go to my website at www.LAUnited.com. It stands for Louisiana United International, and you can Google us, read about us, you know, Pastor Pinckney, they can also, you know, some people, everybody can't come to Louisiana, but they can definitely go on my website and make a donation. They can join up and do a membership for $25 a year. You know, that would really help us a lot. Also, they can call me. They can call me at 985-503-0626. That's 985-503-0626. And I really want people to call me if they have any questions about the unanimous is not enough, the people that are incarcerated, how we, you know, plan to help those people, because we're putting a structure in place. You know, that was one of the things that I'm also excited about. Chairman O'Malley, you know, he instructed us on how to, you know, set up a structure so that we can have a national steering committee and also a local executive committee that is going to be able to come together and get the work done and get the word out, so that people can be educated about this and all the avenues that, you know, we need in order to make this a success. And we're not going to wait no 100 years. We're not going to wait no 40 years. We're not going to wait at all. We're going to get these people home. We're going to get them home with their loved ones and their families, Pastor Pinckney.
Absolutely. Belinda Parker Brown. Hey, thank you so much, Belinda, for doing the work that you're doing. The Louisiana United International Corporation, you're doing a wonderful job. Stay focused. And I was just happy to have my wife down there with me, Dorothy. She always do good.
Yes.
She's always on top of things. And
she was so beautiful. I think she liked it down here, Pastor Pinckney. She could have, you know what, when y'all come back, y'all got to stay a while longer.
Yeah, well, you know, she's a Southern girl, so that's how that works. So, you know, I had that.
This weather looked good on her down here.
Oh, yeah, that weather looked good on me, too. I have to tell you the truth. But listen, I don't have any more time for Linda Brown. We will talk soon. God bless you. God keep you. Give your family, your whole family, a hug and a kiss. Tell them that Reverend Pinckney said, hey, I love them. And it's going down. That's all I can tell you.
Yes.
All right.
Thank
you.
All right.
All right.
Okay, now. Bye-bye.
Okay.